Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, and welcome to the National Town Hall Mental Health and Trauma. We have Sister Lou Princess Aziz. She was born in Mississippi and raised in the western suburbs of Chicago from the age of 3. She led a life marked by continuous learning and a passion for education. She majored in microbiology at Concordia University and later expanded her knowledge of the field by studying biostatistics at the University of Memphis. After her postgraduate studies, Lou Princess returned to Illinois with her 2-year-old daughter and applied her expertise in microbiology as a senior microbiologist at a biotoxin laboratory for an intravenous pharmaceutical manufacturing company. However, she soon felt the call to shift her career toward education, becoming a certified substitute teacher for the Bellwood School District for 4 years. Lou Princess then returned to Memphis and continued her teaching career with Memphis City Schools. A year later, she transitioned into the role of corporate office manager of Olympic Taxes. Her entrepreneurial spirit led her to open her own office a season later, expanding her business into real estate and financial literacy. And in 2018, after remarrying and moving part-time to St. Louis, Lou Princess was invited by Mark Shaheed to join her as a guest speaker on American Muslim 360, the Reconstruction of Parenting, Family, and Leadership Workshop. This opportunity led her to host the show, Let's Talk About It, Keeping It Real, where she discusses topics foundational to the reconstruction of parenting, family, and leadership. Lou Princess' work is deeply rooted in her research on the history of parenting and family as it relates to African-American community. She focuses on the individual as a core unit of parenting and addresses the psychological impact of America's brutal treatment of the descendants of chattel slavery. Her research includes the work of psychologist experts like Dr. Joy DeGruy, Dr. Daniel G. Amin, Dr. Bessel van de Kord, Napoleon Hill, and John C. Maxwell. Lou Princess returned to graduate school and is now completing a master's in education, trauma resilience at Concordia University, and a master's in Islamic leadership from the Islamic Leadership Training and Development Program. Upon graduating, she aims to design a trauma informed education curriculum that aligns with the Quran and the teachings of Imam Warsdeen Muhammad Rahim Allah Alay. Please join me in welcoming Lou Princess Aziz, a dedicated educator, entrepreneur, and an advocate for trauma-informed education as she shares her insights on the topics of what does trauma do to the brain. Without further ado, we're going to welcome Princess Lou Princess Aziz. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Wa alaikum assalam. And Ramadan Mubarak.
It's a pleasure to have you here with us, alhamdulillah. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Lou Princess, and let you get started today with National Town Hall Mental Health and Trauma, where she's going to be talking today about how it affects the brain and what it does to your brain to have this trauma. So, inshallah, I'm turning that over to you. Assalamu alaikum.
First, I want to say thank you for inviting me to share this information and teaching with a listening audience. I'm grateful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for this platform and grateful for this assignment. I did not know, several years ago when I joined AM360 that I would be on this course, and praise be to Allah that I agree and am willing and is guiding me through this destined endeavor, if you will. And so, as you said, we're going to be talking about what trauma does to the brain, but I first want to preface this with the background understanding of why we're talking about trauma and why it's important to talk about trauma. First of all, what is trauma? We know that trauma is the result of impact on a person through the experience of abuse. It's the experience of many, and abuse in many forms, whether it's sexual abuse, mental abuse, psychological abuse, medical abuse, so forth and so on. And referencing Dr. Joy DeGruy, we have experienced a specific kind of trauma as it relates to the experience that our ancestors have endured as chattel slaves. And this trauma it's manifested in how our culture has developed from and during the experience of chattel slavery. I want to preface that because some of the challenges that I do get and the pushback that I do get in this path is that many African Americans do not believe or do not accept the idea of mental health illness or the idea that we should incorporate mental health into our everyday assessment of how we're doing. And I just am very adamant in bringing us to the understanding that we should include assessing our mental health. We should be very serious and diligent about it, as we have been in recovering from the experience of being sentenced of chattel slavery. Before I go on, I do want to say I do appreciate some of the findings that lead me to believe that we are a resilient people. We are a resilient people in such a way that baffles the minds of psychologists, that baffles the minds of scientists and researchers in other disciplines. How do we still survive as we have survived, and how do we still push through? But irrespective of the data that speaks on the reading and the math comprehension scores that say that our students are struggling, irrespective of that, we as Black women in America represent the majority of college students who receive degrees. So we went from early 1900s of being maybe 1 or 2% to now being 1 or 2% attending college to now representing 63% of our population in college and receiving degrees. I want to say that, so that I don't disregard the fact that we are resilient, we are survivors. However, with that being said, if we could give some serious attention and expand our knowledge base on the impact of trauma and be respectful and regardful to that, there is no limit to the advancement and the accomplishments that we as a people can achieve. So that's one of the reasons why I am very serious about that, if this endeavor, if you will. So getting to what does trauma do to the brain? So we've already talked about that. We've all experienced trauma. It's deeply rooted in our culture. It's deeply rooted in how we parent, and it shapes everything that we know about ourselves today. And so to address those, the issues or the ills that still continue to be present in our community, we need to go down to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is not a psychological remedy at this point. The root of the problem is a biological entity. It's biological place. That's where we need to go, is to the biology. And why there? Because it's going to address the traumas of everyone and not just the Black American, number one. And number two, it's going to address the specific issues that we endure. And then it's going to address some challenges. It's going to relieve us of challenges in our mind as it relates to accepting that we have been traumatized and that we do have certain presentations in our personality and in our makeup and how we operate in our everyday lives resulting from that trauma. We don't recognize that because in our resilience, we have packaged this trauma in a way where it makes us victorious and not victims. So one of the great things about it is that we do survive and we are resilient. The bad thing about it is that we are still experiencing the mental illnesses that are stemming from the traumatic experiences. So the first thing I want to start with is the connection between the development of executive functioning and our success in every area of our lives. So just simply for the sake of time, briefly talk about what trauma does to the brain. Is it disrupts certain so if we were to look at the brain as a computer, and there in the computer there are programs or applications, if you will. The applications relating to executive functioning are very intricately woven into a person's psychological development as a successful human being. And those applications are disrupted during trauma. So we recognize that we've experienced trauma and that there has been a disruption in our executive functioning, and there's data that can that speaks to this. However, the data does not make the connection simply because that's just the essence or the spirit of racism, or systemic racism. Now, as it relates to executive functioning, these are functions that are high-level functions, high critical thinking functions. And those are the functions that are related, that are responsible for thinking a thing, planning a thing, and executing a thing. It includes having a memory to remember the thing that you thought, remember the plan that you're making, and remember the order. It includes putting things in order. It also includes when it is engaged properly, your emotions are in order as well. When your executive functioning are engaged or working properly. So we recognize through history and through statistics that many of our Black African-Americans, citizens, descendants of slavery, I would get away from using the term that separates us from those that are not Black that have received, that have endured trauma. But because of Joyce DeGruy, I'm very, very convinced that there's a specific kind of trauma that we've endured. However, at the same time, with that being said, it has the same effect on everyone's brain, not just the African-American brain. Anyone who receives or endures this kind of a trauma will have these issues as it relates to their brain functioning and development. So just a summary of some specific issues of in development is the development of your self-esteem, development of your esteem, how you view yourself, how you see yourself. Low self-esteem can significantly influence the development of executive functions, plays a crucial role in our daily lives. The cognitive processes, we have executive functioning, those things that go on in the brain, and then cognitive functioning is what you see expressed outside. They're both interwoven, they're both connected, if you will, intricately to operate smoothly, if you will. So when trauma affects, when a person or group of people are experiencing the effects of trauma, their esteem or what they think about themselves is affected. And how does that relate to your executive functioning? There's an relationship. All the functions of your emotions, all the functions of the way you think, all the functions related to planning, meeting a goal, all those things are intertwined and interwoven, and they communicate with each other, if you will. And so using the example of low self-esteem and how it inevitably affects executive functioning, or even low self-esteem, that's one of the most important, because that's the most significant bag of what the trauma does to the African American. It lowers trauma has lowered our self esteem, lowered what we think about ourselves. And so I want us to imagine if we were a 5-year-old student or a 10-year-old student in school and a descendant of chattel slavery with the with low self-esteem. First of all, a 5-year-old or whatever, or elementary school student does not understand the concept of esteem. But what he does understand or what he does experience is that he does not have a healthy amount of self-regard. And he doesn't even understand that. We see in healthy and unhealthy expression of low self-esteem in many different areas. Now, because of our resilience, we don't see these expressions as an issue or an illness. We see these expressions as maybe that's that's a bad child. And so now the child feels that he's a bad person. We can see it as an adult who is stuck in their ways, if you will, which is another traumatic impact presentation of the traumatic impact. We've heard people say, you know, this is, you know, Brahma stone. That's just how she is. That's another symptom is being stuck in your ways or being inflexible. Your flexibility meaning that you can receive new information, you can process new information, and you can actually facilitate your own growth and development. And one thing I wanted to give is an image of what this all looks like. So, like, if you can imagine, you've got self-esteem that's directly connected to how you develop empathy. And empathy is a key. It's a major key to developing your executive functioning. Empathy, how you can perceive and receive and relate to another person's pain or injury. That part of you is damaged, and its ability is lessened. So it has a direct impact on your developing of high executive functions. As it relates to cognitive ability, executive functioning and executive functioning is a process of cognitive ability. And then there are two ways in which information is processed in this area of your brain, if you will. There's the top down, and then there's the bottom up. And I'm saying that because we recognize a certain scripture in the Bible that says, you know, we are the head and not the tail. And this is, I believe this does demonstrate a guidance in this word that we can draw from that. Why is it important that we be the head, meaning why our head should be lean and not our tail? So the top down is you think something, you think a thing, you consider a thing, you plan about that thing, and you execute a plan. Simply put, bottom up is something impacts you. You got hurt or injured. Use that as an example. And you respond to that. There's a reaction. So I also want to preface this. Both of these ways of information coming in and affecting and activating reactions are very important. You don't want to be only top down and not be bottom up. There has to be a balance. But what's happening through this experience of trauma, an insistent experience, continuous and non-relenting, is that we tend to be more bottom up. We tend to be more of a reactive. We can be more reactive instead of thinking before we respond, if you will, if that makes sense. At any time while I'm giving, sharing this information, I am open and welcoming to comments. You know, there's sometimes that you might want to have a comment and you might want to get it out at that time. My empathetic brain says I understand because I might forget what I want to say or might forget what I have to say, what I have to say might relate to what's being said. So at any time, if any of those that are listening that want to say or share, press one. And we'll open your mic and address your questions, concerns, or sharing at that time. So I'm not sure how familiar we are with the work of George DeGroy or with the work of Dr. Vessel van der Kolk. Dr. Vessel van der Kolk writes her dissertation in a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And simply put, it says that your body keeps the score of, it keeps a it keeps a compilation of all the interactions and all the data and all the activations of programs that are running. And it, those results are stored in the body so that when you do have a reaction that's bottom up, you can react, you can have the appropriate reaction, if you will. And so some of some inappropriate reactions that we see very often in the community of those that are members that have received, endured intergenerational trauma, we see this displayed as being able to not be able, inability to control your emotions. I mean, you can appreciate where if your executive functioning is if not operating optimally from the top down, and you're using bottom up, which means you are operating in life, going about your way, reacting to injury, and that seems to reason. And we can appreciate that truth because of our history, if you will. But then again, we are resilient people, and we do. We're very resilient people. I just want to make sure that that's the picture of top down and bottom up. So we want to be more of top down than we are bottom up in our everyday today going about intentionally. The intention should be the bottom up. Now our reaction should be top up, meaning something happens to you, you need to move out of the way, somebody's coming down the road, you could get hit by a car, so forth and so on. Yes, you do want to be able to move quickly and get out of the way, or you want to be able to defend yourself, if you will. But if we're always operating bottom up, that result in us being hypervigilant, meaning that we're always ready for the next war, we're always ready for the next argument, we're always ready for the next verbal combat, if you will, that part that does develop your personality. Does. I want to now talk about a specific mental disorder. We can talk about many of them, but for the sake of time, we're going to talk about a specific mental disorder that developed from this extreme exposure to trauma that we've endured. And one disorder that we're very familiar with, or now are very familiar with, is narcissistic personality disorder. Now, before I go on and talk about narcissistic personality disorder, I do see that we have a caller, and I want to, if it's okay, go ahead and take the next caller, the caller. We have 908-296. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your comment. State your name and where you're calling from and what you'd like to share or ask us today. Assalamu alaikum or good afternoon. Yes.
Good afternoon, sister. My name is Imam Shahid Abdullah. I'm calling from New Jersey, Louisville, New Jersey. I have a question regarding what you've been discussing in terms of, I guess you don't call it a post-traumatic slave syndrome, but it comes from Dr. Joy DeGruy, and it cites many things, and many of the things you were talking about make a lot of sense. But I do have a question regarding the next concept. Dr. DeGruy, in her latest researches, she's taken somewhat of a different position, not opposite, but just different, and that she's doing more studies relevant to what happens when you look over a long period of time to that. And she, and along with other professors such as Thomas Sewell, and a couple of other people who have been studying this idea of the trauma that was received by the slaves being passed down genetically through the generations from one generation to the next, it doesn't always hold true in the broader picture. There's some symptoms, they say, that you can pick up. At the same time, there's a lot of information that occurred in the African-American people between the year of 1896 and 1932 that showed that the African-American people, after slavery and after everything has gone on in their lives, made more progress in America than any other group in America. And they had made more family progress. They had less family, single family homes. They had all of these things where the families were doing well during that particular time that they called the Jim Crow era. But the African-American people were doing tremendous, which was what some of them say, and I agree with this, that the trauma they received in slavery probably did affect a generation or so of our people. But I do believe that the social conditions that we found ourselves in and able to work ourselves out of have caused the African-American people to make advances beyond getting into the problem they say lingers on from slavery. There's much evidence to show that we have recovered from that and made advance, a great advance. So what is your opinion about that kind of information that's coming out now? And much of it I agree with and some of it I don't, but what is your opinion about the progress shown in the African-American people in that time period, about a 36-year time period, where we built banks and all of those, the Black Wall Streets and so forth and so on? What does that indicate about the effects of slaves and the slavery situation to the present development of the African-American, not counting that time has changed from 1932, that the social integration interfered with that particular development. But before social integration in 63 and 68, we're talking about in that time period of the so-called Jim Crow era. What is your opinion about the effects of the trauma of people who talk about to our people generally in their behavior?
That's a very good question. I'm glad you posed that question. Going back to, you know, what my introduction, I did say we are a resilient people, and the data shows the same thing that you're saying, that we are a resilient people. We are people who had developed, in spite of the insistent trauma and the insistent abuse continuously, we had developed in our culture a way to take that energy and use it for growth and development. We were able to tap into that energy. We still do tap into that energy. I'm posing, in addition to that, that many of us are still struggling and struggling in great ways. So while there are 20 to 30% of us who are excelling and exceeding in ways that are baffling to everyone, scientists, doctors, psychologists, everyone, it baffles them. How are there women, 63%, excelling, being so successful that way? Yes, I appreciate that. Yes, I do accept that, and I recognize that in the data that I'm seeing. At the same time, we also have data that says that our students are not meeting the standards in reading, math, comprehension, and science. We have students that are graduating from high school that cannot read and cannot add. And that the trend of us excelling, we have not peaked, we're still excelling, but there's also a trend where there are those of us, majority of us, that are not making the mark and are holding and displaying the effects of trauma. Now, with those that are the 30% who do represent the statistics that we talk about, we've made great strides. Mm-hmm. We continue to make great strides. There's something that historically happened after 1932, between 1932 and 1970, that addressed directly that growth. And it didn't address it in a way where it was helping it. It addressed it in a way where it was intentionally to impede that growth and to slow that growth down. And so what we see thereafter is cultural development through many things that happened between 1950 and 1970 to continue to divide our families. So how, to continue to divide our families. Now, it's been said that the education of the black woman or the imprisonment of the black man, these things, they do work together to give you a bigger picture of how trauma is impacting our community as a whole. Now, as a whole, we're not in that. As a whole, all of us are not striving and thriving. Some of us are, if you will.
Well, why would we attribute that to trauma? In other words, we have clear evidence that shows that the African-American people were making tremendous advances, leaps and bounds advances during the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And after the integration, social integration with these new laws they came in with, and this new development of highways and things of that nature, they ran straight through the African-American business districts. The emphasis, I would think, may be more toward the events that came from social integration rather than the trauma that occurred 400 years ago. We can't really do anything about that now. That kind of history we cannot change. But we do know there is a pro and con to the whole issue. We know there's good and bad in most things. But we have a period of time in the African-American people after slavery, a long enough period of time that we could measure the growth and development of the African-American people. Had it stayed on that trajectory, we'd have been far in advance of all of the other Chinatowns and places like that, and even the Yiddish groups. We'd have been far in advance of that. So I think that looking at the trauma of slavery is not as the culprit. Well, I don't think that is the culprit. I think the culprit is not seeing the things that come along with some of the laws that the European American put into the legal system to slow down the growth and development of the African American people specifically, and at the same time create jobs and concepts for themselves just to be our medicine doctors or just to be our tell us how we should live and how we should not live. I think that perhaps our energies might be more at to look at what our forefathers did during the 20s and 30s and try to implement the drive and structure they had to educate themselves, because we've been educated by the same people who are telling us about these statistics, meaning the European American. They're telling us what we should and should not be doing, but they're the same one who's educating us, which means that our lack of education is directly on their hands, not on our hands. In places where we have African-Americans, educating African-Americans, we have tremendous achievement. In places where we have African-Americans being educated by the European-American, we have failure. So that's the indication, I would think. Mm-hmm. So what do you say in regards to that? And getting the control of our own education back in our own hands.
Absolutely. Okay, so what I first want to do is address your comment about that this is trauma that's old and it's antiquated and there's nothing that we can do about that. I respect that and I agree with that. However, the machine of systemic racism did not end with the abolition of slavery. It just changed to express itself in a different nuance. So when I say, and I'm probably going to have the same graduation as Dr. DeGroy, and recognizing that this is a machine that's not just specific to that time, and that we do need to address the truth about our growth and advancement, if you will. But I'll say this. We were not slaves. But let me ask you this, Imam Shahid.
Mm-hmm.
In your idea of parenting, I'm just going to, for example, most of us have been raised to parent a certain way that developed directly out of slavery and developed directly through the experience of being a chattel slave, system of racism. Many of us have developed personality disorders, or we've been hurt in so many ways that those ways do present in a way that's damaging today in our community. And I would apologize before saying this, but the work of Imam W.D. Muhammad, the knowledge and wisdom of Imam W.D. Muhammad, and his training and teaching and leadership and development. We should not have any masjid in this nation that is not overflowing. Those numbers tell us that there's something to matter, and then we need to address what that matter is. There's something mm-hmm. to matter, and so you're an imam, and I like to ask you some of the things that are going on in the community that can be addressed, that we should address. What would you say to what those issues are, if you will?
Right. Yes, I would look at them as what they are. I wouldn't try to paint a pretty picture or a different picture. I think mm-hmm. I would look at exactly what they are. Our okay. well-being for a time period, two time periods. One time period during slavery was in the total control of the European American slave master mm-hmm. and those who write books and things of that nature. That period mm-hmm. of time, Jim Crow, when they segregated us, we wasn't under that control. We made great advancement. But now when we got back into social integration, we got back under their control again. That's when they start to take over our school systems, and they begin to teach us and begin to teach what we could teach our people. So the mm-hmm. education of the African-American people became solely the principal guidance of European-American. So we should not take the blame for that. All we should be looking mm-hmm. for are solutions right now. Because
right.
the systemic racism is the blame. So we don't have to examine that anymore. We accept that. That's
right.
the blame. Now what we are looking for are solutions. And what we see in history, the solutions to problems, the problems we have always been solved by cultures. What they did, they established their own cultures, and they established their culture that benefited the people of that culture first, then they benefited mm-hmm. people outside of that culture. See, so cultural embracement is key. Because it's the same thing that our foreparents used during the 20s. They used that mm-hmm. cultural idea. They became one because they saw themselves as one culture. They didn't see themselves mm-hmm. as broken up into different cultures like they're doing with us now. They tell us that we all are people of color, which is another form of systemic racism jargon or logic. Or they kind of lied to us. That we're not people of color. When they say we're people of color, they're saying they're special. They're saying they're better than people of color because they set themselves on the outside of people of color. That's a racist point of view. That's part of the systemic racist talk. They say they're not racist, and they use racism all the time to discredit
right.
us and to keep us from looking at our own ability to achieve the greatness that we can. That's what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad stressed a lot when he said, do for self. That was what he had learned. He had learned that from his days as a child in Georgia when the African-American people were doing for self. That he knew that that was a key to the development of African-American people. And as you said about Imam Warafuddin Muhammad, that was simply another time period when that same idea was being expressed again. We now are in the position where we must take that on as a challenge for our mm-hmm. growth and development to do something not just for ourselves but educate ourselves. To begin to embrace our culture like it's our own and not something that has been dictated to us like they tell us, they call it the black culture, they call it hip-hop culture. They are the ones that introduce those concepts. When I say they, I'm speaking of European-Americans specifically. that they are the ones that introduce those kind of ideas and concepts to our people, because they demote the concept of growth. They demote the concept of flourishing of your own selves. And anything to demote that aspect in a people is not really good for the people. And the people then have to make the adjustment. We have to make the adjustment. We can't look to the European American to make the adjustment for us. We have to make the adjustment ourselves. And we have to thank God that we have that, that he gave us that power to be able to make the adjustment ourselves, to make our lives better, to make our future brighter. It's up to us. And once we realize that, and it's not what happened in slavery, it's not what happened even 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Those things are already impacting on us. Now it's what will happen between now and our future generations. Now and our future generations have to be impacted by our ability to do something that we can consider beneficial for ourselves.
I think that my position for starting at that point was to give credence to the fact that we do have something significant to our injuries that we do need to pay attention to. And then there's some things that are woven in our culture that we need to unroot. We need to uproot.
Right.
And those things do go back to our development through those times. I do not make the position that yesterday or years, 100 years ago, that we're still doing the things that we did 100 years. We've made great strides. We can make greater strides. And this is the day, and this is the time and the season for us to shoot off. We're literally on the precipice of shooting off. And the position that the place that I'm starting with is getting every individual to understanding the individual part of their growth and development, the inside part of their growth and development. How did they get that way to where we, you know, how did you develop? How did your husband become a narcissist? How did your wife become bipolar? How are your children suffering from anxiety and depression? That's the reason why I'm starting with the how, is so that we can get to the answer. What stops us from getting to the answer is that we don't believe in the how, and we don't respect that there's a what. So that's the reason why I start there. I agree with you. You make every single point I've discovered and continue to discover in my research and data, collecting research and data. We are resilient people. We are an amazing people, an incredible people. And I as it relates to my experience or my learning in this, in the course, the history, I'm studying the history of curriculum in America. Curriculum in America has been, curriculum in education has been used. It was put together, designed, and used with the intention to weaponize education against the growth and development of people, not just the African American, but people. They first started with their own women and their own children. They didn't invent this energy or the essence of the energy that runs systemic racism didn't burst with black people. They have that essence was already around, and it was used and applied to control and to guide the development of black people for their own sake. This is written specifically, literally, in the data. You have to read the nuances between the lines, if you will, and read many, many, many research articles and books to see the nuance of sexism, the patriarchy, and then thereafter the birth of racism. Racism is a child of sexism or patriotism, if you will. So we're not special in that we get a special hate. There's a certain hate that just manifests as personality, if you will, and that I do share respect and regard for. I'm new in this, and I am diligent about tenacious about, you know, doing this work respectfully, which is why I decided to go return to grad school and get my degree in education, specifically to learn how to design curriculums with the knowledge of how today our children are struggling mentally. And you're right, that mental struggle, we don't need to go back hundreds of years. We can go back 20 years. Children who are abandoned or children who are abused or so forth and so on. My point was to bring out the fact that the ills that we are enduring, they're not 20 years old. They're ancient. They're ancient, if you will. And my hope is that I give people and students that I'll be teaching the tools to see themselves differently. So if you see yourself differently and you see that we weren't all cotton pickers. We were in every aspect in the nation and its development. We were doctors, we were lawyers, we were scientists, we were so forth and so on. Now, you don't see that overtly because the names have changed. My work had to be labeled under the work of my owner. But if we knew that, if we could repair our students' self-esteem, our children's self-esteem, our husbands and wives and sisters' self-esteem in the places where it does affect their executive functioning and development, we can then raise ourselves as a people in ways that no one, not one man walking, breathing on this earth can stop us. And this is something that's specific to the African American in America. I caution to speak about Black people in other countries and other places, but specifically in America, we have been exposed to a certain amount of resistance that has made us stronger. And so I am in line with you when you say that we should be talking about solutions. But one thing is I'm coming with a solution and saying this is a solution to this specific problem, if you will. Let's get back to my comment about our masters not being filled. And we have, let's just say that we have a societal ill that exists that perpetuates abuse in a way where the mothers will take their children and not just leave the mastiff, but they'll leave the whole being. We need to address that. We need to address that as a community, fall back and address it as an individual, and then go even back to the biological so that we're in a line everywhere we go, starting at the biology. How does the brain function? Align that to what Allah says in Quran. Can we see this demonstrated in his wisdom? We see that clearly. We can see that clearly, which is a whole nother program, series of programs, if you will. But Allah has the psychological development of the human being in mind, and he gives us directions on how to navigate that psychology. So my goal is to empower us with the knowledge of how we operate inside our minds first, develop ourselves as the best individuals mentally, physically and spiritually healthy in a healthy way. And then that spreads to us having better relations with each other. We'll have better, and then we can parent our children better. And then we can go out into the community and be better people, all with dealing with or handling or addressing the ills that are holding us back. Today we have ills that are evidently holding us back from growth that we can make. To make that growth. And I want to ask you your response to that, if you will.
Yes. Oh, I agree with what you're saying, and I agree with it. And if I were to a slightly different observation, but I wouldn't even be giving a different observation. I'd be simply looking at it. It's like looking at the other side of a balloon. You know, it's not a different balloon, but it's just a different side. So I'm thinking in terms of as you were talking about the individual and how it's important to develop the individual. This is why most cultures that come into America, they don't lose their culture. They don't blend into the what they call this, social pot that everybody get mixed in. They don't do that. They keep themselves apart because they know the only survival that their people have, their children have, as individuals, they have to be educated in their culture. They have to be taught in their language. They have to be taught in their concept of God, their concept of ideas and things of that nature. We have to sort of take that same kind of position. I think we have to take the kind of position that we have to be the teachers of ourselves. And we don't have the facility set up yet throughout the country, because every time we go in a different direction like this, the European American puts something in our path. Not physically every European American does this, but it's just the system that they have set up to be a system that can automatically push a particular idea and concept and interfere with our growth and development. Just like we talk about systemic racism, we talk about the racial divide and things of that nature. Most people don't know that what you just said a moment ago, most people don't know that. That racism is not something that just started now. The racist ideas among different people, the concept of white and black, that came from America. There's no such place as white. There's no such place as black. They don't exist. The only thing that exists are like places like Ghana and Nigeria and Germany and places where people come from, their place of origin. But that was instituted back in around the 1700s and 16, it started back in 1676 when the European American had to figure out a way to divide the people, because just 20 years of advance of that, a European American colonist united Africans, Native Americans, united them together and came against the British. Not the British that we fought in the Revolutionary War, not that time, but before that, when the colonies were first being formed in Jamestown. After that time, the governor of Jamestown got with the king of Great Britain, and they allowed them to change the philosophical thinking of the colonies. They called some of them white people, and they said they give the ones that call white people special privileges. See, this is in the law. This is in their law books. And give them special privileges. They can carry guns. They can have the court system. They can consider themselves British. That's what the white people consider themselves British. All is not considered white people don't have those privileges. That's the first time that special privileges was introduced into America. But the goal was not to make superiority one over the other, but it was to divide and conquer. They wanted to divide the working class, so that the worker class will never rise again against the leadership. So they figured if they can create a buffer system between them and the rest of the people, the people would never be united enough to come against the leadership. That's why they created the concept called the white people. And that white people came, and then it started the white supremacy, and over the years became many, many different things. But that was the beginning of it. They all were just, there was indentured servants, or they were slaves, or a Native American during that time, or Africans. That's what existed during that time. After that period, that revolution they started with Nathaniel Bacon, he was the one who started that. After that, they came up with this concept of divide and conquer. And that divide and conquer affects us right now today.
We have another. Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have another program that we're late for that came on at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and we still have a couple of people in queue, okay? So I'm going to get to these couple of people here, but if y'all just give me if y'all can just really limit it, because I'm going into somebody else's time. So, inshallah, I'm going to go to these couple of people, and then we need to conclude. And I appreciate it. I apologize for any inconvenience, but, we have to get to the next program, inshallah. Thank you so, so much. All right. 727-741, Martha, Nyla.
Assalamu alaikum. Okay, she's on now. 704-806. Assalamu alaikum. Okay, wait a minute. Martha?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
oh, wow.
I was okay, I just wanted to make one contribution, inshallah, calling from St. Petersburg, Florida, Martha Nyla, and that is, God willing, the CWSC initiative is faith and family, starting with cleanliness, relationship and cleanliness, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.
Mm-hmm.
Wa alaikum
assalam.
704-806, assalamu alaikum.
Well, like, all right, on, real quick. Sister, yes, this is Sister Kalita. I was wanting to ask her some questions in reference to education, but I'll pass on that. But I do want to reference as a teacher that I would like to see more solution-oriented approaches. A lot of teacher training is focused on trauma, and there's different levels of trauma. I understand that. But there are some students who are African-American who come to school, do what they're supposed to do, and there are others that, of course, need some assistance in that. And I've seen it be used as a tool when you tell children they can't do things, because they'll tell you, well, I can't do that. I can't sit still. I can't. But when they want to do it, they'll do it. So I just wanted that differentiation, because as a teacher, I also think that they put the focus on that, because there's no human being who is not going to experience any trauma. Prophet Muhammad, he will say, experience trauma. But sister, I really like your presentation. I know you're doing research on it, so we need to talk, and inshallah, solution oriented, so we can move our people forward and not give them crutches, because as Imam Shahid Abdullah said, that's one of the things they want us to focus on. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to quickly respond, Sister Kalita. Yes, solution oriented. That's one of, and that's the answer, to be solution oriented. The crutch, I don't agree with giving them crutches. You don't get a pass. You don't get to not know. You don't get to not develop because you decided that you don't believe something or you can't do something, which is why I spoke about the self esteem or the low self esteem. My goal is to draw the picture in a way where that we can see and get the information that empowers us to be better parents to ourselves, parents to our children, and leaders in our community. But it's such a complex subject that it's difficult to encompass all of it in one session, if you will, but they are solution-oriented. Also, the trauma-informed curriculum is student-centered, meaning that you are addressing the issues of trauma by meeting the student where they are in their learning and in their learning needs. You're addressing the curriculum with the knowledge in mind of what trauma does to their growth and development. So, as for example, real quickly, if you see a child acting out and misbehaving, if you're trauma-informed, you may have more school tools and resources to see that behavior, make an informed assessment or more informed assessment with the knowledge of how trauma affects growth and development, and then you can make adjustments in your curriculum to meet the student's needs. And so in the long run, what I hope to see happen and what we who are developing curriculums, and it wouldn't be just trauma-informed, it has to be also oriented to a different and also include what the orientation is, if you will. So all of those do put together to our solution, to provide the solution, as opposed to these are the reasons why this is that. But we cannot ignore the data, because we cannot ignore the thing that needs to be fixed. We need to look at that thing that needs to be fixed, figure out what the fixing is, and then address and apply the solution, if you will.
Yes, and real quick, solution should be morality. There is a lack of morality in a lot of our
mm-hmm.
students. That is coming from the home life. We need to go back to worshiping God like we did years ago
mm-hmm.
and building our family structures, because a lot of it stems from a lack of morality. And I believe that, because I see it, the behavior patterns that are going on in addition to
Absolutely.
The trauma. It's a willful disobedience.
It's a disrespect for humanity, and it's a disrespect mm-hmm. for God consciousness. And so okay. combined with the trauma training, yes, ma'am, I do believe we need that. We do, and we are informed about that. But like you said, it needs to be more individualized and also strategically looked at so how we can serve each specific student. Thank you so yes. much. I look forward to hearing you again.
You're welcome.
We're going to have to get off you all. Thank you so much. We'll revisit this again, inshallah. We do this every other month, so maybe we'll do a part two, inshallah, in May. So we'll revisit that, Princess, and I'll talk with you about it, okay? But I really need to get off before Brother Imam Kareem can come on. Thank you so much. Right. Thank everyone. Thank the listening audience, Brother Imam. Everything is so well put together. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
And I talk more about this every Sunday. They can come in. I can't say that. Every Sunday we do talk more about this. So if they can tune in on our AM360 at the same time today, additional next Sunday and thereafter, we'll talk more about this and have more discussions, if you will, and share more information on AM360. Let's talk about it. Keeping it real.
How do we get in touch with you? How do we get in touch with you, Sister Princess Aziz?
Our number How do you get in touch with me? Well, my phone number. My business phone number. Area code 314-540-3236. And my email address is luepeter.aziz@outlook.com. So I can either call, text, or send me an email.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'd love to hear from you.
Assalamu alaikum. Ramadan Mubarak.